It's the Sod Pod, brought to you by Grassland Agro. The Sod Pod.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sod Pod. This is episode 17. I'm joined with Lauren Stanley and Owen Quinn. John O'Loughlin is floating around in the background. He's in the sin bin. Johnny might have showed up on a competitor podcast at Dairy Edge going live this weekend. So we'll decide how long John spends in the sin bin, and we'll expect a big apology from him going forward. But on a serious note, it's great to have John at the Dairy Edge there as well. Another great platform, always worth a great listen. And actually my favourite one, the Young Stock podcast on the Journal as well. I always really like to listen to that. Now, we've got a guest. We have Matt Thompson with us today. Matt Thompson is an agronomist for Grassland Agro in the East Wicklow region. But Matt's got a really interesting story. Matt, talk to us.
Morning, folks. How are we getting on?
Great.
All good. Great to be here. Long time listener, first time contributor, you might say, to the ever-growing Sod Pod. And I suppose Matt Thompson's my name. Obviously, I'm the ATC for Grassland in Wicklow, in the east of Wicklow specifically. I have to mention the east because Jack Sally will get tick with me now if I don't. He's over on the west side, so to keep things sweet there. But I suppose I've been with Grassland the last 2 years now, nearly. Things are going quite well on the ground and building a lot of good relationships there with farmers in the East Wicklow region and getting on quite well, which is brilliant. It makes the job very rewarding, you know.
Yeah.
You mentioned my story, I suppose. It is slightly different to most other people in the agricultural sector. I think it is probably worth mentioning, I don't actually come from a farm. My parents are from the town, as am I, from Bray, specifically in Wicklow. But I was very fortunate, I suppose, that I was reared around farms from a very young age. Family, friends, holidays, this kind of stuff, and discovered at a very young age, probably I'd say 7 or 8, that I wanted to be a farmer, and that's all I was interested in. To my mother's absolute horror, busting this lad around the farms and around the yards and all this kind of stuff throughout my childhood. So very grateful for it, though, in fairness, that they always really supported me, and it was whatever I wanted to go into once I was going to go and give it everything. That was the main thing. So I suppose my foray into farming started when I was probably 16, myself and Andy Fahey, who's actually the rep in Carlo. Andy and me share a very similar story. We're both from Bray. We decided we were going to become farmers when we were in school. Transition year, we said, right, that's it.
Yeah.
We're going into this. So we used to sublet a quarter of an acre off a tillage farmer local to us and grow spuds and sell them door to door.
Right. Transition year.
From transition year in school. Brilliant. We were only on learner permits now. I hope there's no guards listening, but you'd see us on a Saturday morning driving Matt, around Bray.
Andy's not from a farming background either, so the two of you are your neighbours, actually, which is really interesting.
Would you believe it? Myself and Andrew were in school together, and we live in the same housing estate in Bray.
Yeah, and now you're working for the same company. It's mad.
Yeah, and we've always been sort of passing by each other and doing things together. Andy would have worked for a lot of farmers, as myself growing up. Like, when you say you're not from a farm, it's people think, oh, sure, what would you know? But sure, we were on farms since we were probably 12 or 13 to date, like, you know, that sort of way. So we do have a strong enough background in it. The only difference is we don't have any ground at home, which can be a bit tricky, and it's hard to get involved in it, especially from a commercial point of view when you're starting at that point. But it's something I'd say we probably never let it hold us back, you know. And we went and we probably took the education route, and we went done the leaving and went to college, and I actually done 4 years up in Dundalk IT, which was a great time. Really enjoyed that, you know. It was a great course up there and met a lot of good people. Some of them are in the company to date as well, so which is always good crack, you know. Reminiscing about the days in college manner. So
but Matt, it's interesting because there we actually have a good few people within the company that aren't from farming backgrounds, and I know you can kind of say, geez, maybe you'd be at a disadvantage, but you're not. Like, you're probably able to devote more time to the job than us who have farm from home. Well, anyhow, you shouldn't be saying that.
That's true, yeah. In fairness, that's a really good point, Lauren. Like, you know, it's hunger's a great thing, as they say, you know. When you're trying to get going in this industry and maybe you don't have as much going on in the background, it does help. Now, having said that, and we might talk about this in a minute, but I have taken a bit of a turn into part-time farming in the last year, and I suppose that's maybe why I'm on today to talk about it, is the dairy calf to beef side of things. And blessed to go in on a partnership basis with a family in Newtown and Kennedy in County Wicklow. So Paul and Margaret Byrne, a husband and wife team there, and their family are farming in Newtown and have a really good setup there. Traditionally, it would have been a mixed farm, beef and sheep, lambing about 350 ewes and finishing about 60 or 70 cattle a year. And I've been really fortunate, as I say, to get involved with Paul and Margaret and bring a calf to beef site to that farm and explore that with them, which has been brilliant, you know, and it's been really good. And again, it's sort of a partnership model, you might say, where we're both involved in it from a labour point of view and a management point of view. It's really nice to be able to share that. And just what you were saying there, it actually helps with the job then as well, because you have a set of backup there, you've helped, and it's great to be able to do it with them, you know. So we've been in the calf to beef there for the last couple of months. We probably would have started planning for it this time last year, and I've been stuck in there since the spring. Yeah. So it's been really good, really good rearing the calves. And
Matt, what I find really interesting here, though, right, when we look at the farming sector and we look at the pressures that have come on from, I suppose, if I was to be a bit rude, inside the pale, if we use the old language. And if we go into...
Now, Jim.
Yes, exactly. you're almost inside a bit of bread. But those pressures and the perceived pressure that's coming on our community from media channels and from the outside world is really frustrating, because what farming does for Ireland is such a massive industry. It does so much for biodiversity and all these pressures that are there. But we've got you, and we have your buddy Andy Fahey that works with us as well. And again, you're two people involved in an organization of over 150 staff that caught the bug at a young age, you know. And there's people like Matt Thompson out there. You're not the enemy. If you go back to where you started in the housing estate, you're interested in farming. And there's loads of people not in the world of farming that will not be brainwashed by the media and will not be brainwashed by the outside influences that farming is bad and farming is dirty. We all know there is parts of farming that need to improve, but there's no better community than the farming community to do that. But what got the bug when you look back? What really lit you up to go, I don't want to work in the IT sector. I've been so generic on a guy from Bray here. I want to get into the world of farming and make a difference. What sparked that?
Well, I give you a good one, Jim. Like I suppose I never realised it was, at a young age, I never realised it was something that was different until maybe I started going to secondary school. But if I was to put it down to anything, we used to actually, to be honest with you, I'm sitting here in Carrigan Shore in a hotel this morning, and it's a little bit full circle, because I used to go on holidays with family friends of ours down to a farm here in Carrigan Shore and stay in a B&B, and we'd stay Easter, Halloween, during the summer. We'd be down multiple times a year, and the B&B had a farm on it. And the Lacey family ran that farm and the B&B as well. And to be honest with you, that's where the bug really caught on, and that's where it all started. But to be honest, I never realised it was anything that was sort of out of the ordinary. And maybe even so to an extent that when I started working for Grassland and you'd be on farms, lads would be like, geez, that's mad. I can't believe a lad from the town is mad for this. And what happened to you to steer you this way? And it's just, as I said, it really good influences from a young age, really positive. And I suppose, like what you were saying about the community end of things, I'm a little bit lucky that I'm maybe able to see both perspectives, you know, from people from the town and people from the ag sector. But I will say this, and I think it's worth saying that, you know, it was never an issue for farmers to have me around the place. And it was never, like, I was very lucky that a lot of people took me under their wing at a young age. A lot of local farmers around the North Wicklow area, in fairness to them, and used to have me sitting up in tractors and opening gates and lambing ewes. And to them, it was just, it was business as usual, and there was never a fuss made about it. Like, and again, that's probably why I never realised it was a big deal until I started getting onto farming at a professional level.
Yes.
You know, really good early influence. And
so
really
you went to
guidance.
The home of hurling and the home of farming to get the bug down the Tipperary.
You might say that now. You might say that. Yeah, I tell you, we're lucky John O'Loughlin's not on now, because otherwise it'd be another Sunday game here this morning.
Yes, yeah.
I'm going to try and get a few rugby bits in here and there, maybe, if I can, with the World Cup coming up. So,
it's a fascinating story, isn't it? Like, it's fair to say that when you're not born into it, or it's not handed to you on a plate, there's a passion and a drive there to to make it work. There's a sense of that as well.
You wouldn't be at it if you didn't love it, like, you know. And that's probably the reason why I'm always going out to farms full of positivity and buzzing to just be there, because it's when you're standing on the sidelines for so long, oh, and it's great to finally get called in by the manager and have a cut, like, you know. So that's that side of it. And as I say, it's probably a reason I love my job. Like, I'm on 3 to 5 farms a day, every day. Like, for me, if you had told me that when I was 13 or 14 years of age, lads, it was dream stuff, like, you know.
Yes. You've been buzzing.
It's a great testament to the community, though. They want to know your story. They want to learn from you. They want to educate you. They want to tell you their story and all, because that's why, like, to me, I'd be so proud of this community, because everyone wants to learn from each other and do better and maximize everyone. The game needs time and knowledge, and the two pieces just line up better for an even more sustainable agriculture.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Matt, like, I think it's just really admirable what you're doing, and especially to the family in Wicklow that are after letting you in and joining this partnership with them. You might talk a little bit more about that partnership and how it's going for you.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose I would have known Paul through the job, to be honest. Paul Byrne is the farmer there, and his wife Margaret. They're actually they're a dynamic duo. They're a great team. They're always together farming away. And I was doing a lineman plan with Paul one day, and we were looking at, you know, lineman requirements on the farm. And I suppose my story might have struck a chord with him a little bit. And we were just chatting away, and he said, if you were to go farming, what would you go into? And I said, well, to be honest, I've been studying the industry for a while. And I think for someone that's part-time, for one, because I obviously have a full-time job and doesn't have, you know, facilities at home, you might say, I like the idea of the dairy calf to beef. It was something that it resonated with me. I like the idea of it. You buy your stock in, you buy your inputs, you manage the system, and then you have an output at the end of it, and you don't have to calf cows and this kind of thing, and you don't need to spend money on milking parlors and infrastructure as such. So we left it at that anyway. There was no more chat about it. And then I got a phone call one day off him, and he just said, look, we were talking about it and just said it might be interesting, instead of buying in the store cattle next year, to have a cut off this dairy calf to beef, and would you be interested in getting involved? Brilliant. I tell you what, I nearly fell down.
Yeah.
I nearly fell. He said, I don't want you to answer now. I said yes, and he said no, think about it. I said yes. So it wasn't much thought needed, but in fairness, it's not maybe an official partnership as such. We're more just feeling it out and seeing how things go, but I think that's the best way there as well, because and we're working quite well together, I think. And like, we can take holidays, we can take time, I can work full time, Paul has a business off farm as well, so it really suits that system. And that's one thing I would say to people, when we talk about farming, a lot of the time we can become a slave to our system and we're born into it, and this is what we do and all this. But there's no harm in looking and seeing what might suit your lifestyle a bit better, what might suit your off-farm activities a little bit better, you know, that sort of way. And even a lot of farmers are getting on now. The average age of the farmers going up, and dairy calf to beef, it's quite straightforward without having to calf cows and all this kind of thing. And look, absolutely not knocking the suckler herd. I love suckler cattle. To be honest, I always wanted them growing up. But it's just a system that suited me, and I took to it, and it's simple, you know, that sort of way. So we're doing that. We reared 80 calves this year, this spring, which was a fair jump into the deep end, you might say. But to be fair, all or nothing, Lauren, you're dead right. And in fairness, with a couple of people involved, you sort of need the numbers to make it viable, which is fine, you know, it's absolutely perfect. And we've learned a lot, like, you know, and that's one thing I would say. I'm the type of person, maybe I sort of learn by doing. So I've done a lot of research prior to it now, and I tried to have all my ducks lined up, but there's no learning curve like when you're stuck into it, like, you know, and that's the other side of it. So we've bought, as I said, 80 calves in the spring there, and they're all out of grass now, which is great, and driving on. So really happy with it.
And your business is fueled by identifying good calves, right? But obviously I'm looking at Owen here as well. And obviously, Owen, you're on the side of maybe fueling that system from the other way. What's your view from that side?
Yeah, I suppose it's a fair point. Look, to be honest, TB permitting, we prefer to obviously have an offload for the calves. So look, to be honest with you, we're finding this year that quite a few more calves are kind of been leaving the farm directly, as opposed to going directly to the mart. But to me, it is a case that if a farmer's happy that's getting them, they will return. It is about relationships, it's about trust. It's really about getting to know how the calves have been treated in the initial days, the couple of weeks before they leave. But I think what's very, very important, we don't have any preferential treatment, whether it's a Holstein heifer or whether it's an Angus heifer or whatever it may be. Every calf gets their 4 litres of colostrum in the first few hours of its life. But it really is about that harnessing that relationship, Matt. But is that something you find that you've developed even in your first year?
Yeah, I think so, Owen, and I think that's a very good point, to be fair. When I said we bought 80 calves in, we only went to 4 source farms for those 80 calves. That's something I'm quite happy and proud of.
That's fantastic, and
trying to develop relationships with local dairy farmers. That's the other thing as well. We don't have to travel the length and breadth of the country for these calves. If there's a good enough farmer beside you, you're away to the races, you know. And that was one thing we really wanted to do, was minimise source farms and then maximise those numbers of calves from those farms. And it's something that, again, building relationships with the customer or with the supplier, you might say, as us being the customer, and seeing what's going on the ground. You know, that's the thing. You walk into a calf shed there and they're all up and sprightly. It fills you with confidence that these are the right calves, and happy to report that all of our suppliers are those farmers. They're really what we were looking for in that, you know. And even to take that another step forward, something I'd like to look at going into the future. And I know a couple of the dairy calf to beef lads, I'm actually on a course at the minute for it, are already doing this, is they're actually liaising with their dairy farm supplier. Say now for next spring for breeding, and they're actually selecting beef bulls based on the dairy beef index, which is a super tool, I think. You know, it's a really good option there to pick a bull that's going to suit both dairy farmer and beef farmer and produce a calf that's going to be really viable for this system. So we're not there yet, but that's definitely something worth looking at. And I know there's guys on the ground and girls on the ground doing that already, which is really inspiring. Like, you know, that's what you want.
I think, I suppose it's fair to say too that the advances in sac semen has really driven the whole thing on quite a bit. I know 100%. our practice here have changed quite a bit. We're at the point where I don't think there's actually any conventional semen used on the farm at all. So it's purely sexed and then AI beef sares after that. Our priority is getting that cow calved and getting her back into the herd and with a smooth transition. But equally, we do put quite a bit of emphasis on producing, you know, a quality calf that you're happy to offload or, you know, to pass on to the farmer, because farmers do get to know as well. Like, I'll tell you a quick story. I was on a farm once before on Shetland to the Gay, and he actually bought quite a few calves, and it turned out that he was buying the calves from the same mart that we would have brought our calves to. But this particular farmer, he was very, in fairness to him, he's quite clued in, but he had actually generated nearly a blacklist of herd numbers that say he had found that repeatedly give him bother. And by God, weren't we standing? And next, we actually spied one of our herd number, the calf lying on the other side of the feed passage. He looked well, in fairness, but he says, "Oh, I must check if your herd number's on the blacklist." And lucky enough, it wasn't. So that was surprising to know that we're doing something right. But farmers would get to know with it if they're getting repeat problems. It all stems back to that initial management and colostrum.
Definitely, yeah. And the environment the calf is coming from, just to touch on that a little bit further, and maybe coming, we sort of started with your end and maybe coming to the beef farm itself, calf environment is definitely the biggest priority I would put on developing this system. It's something that we learned hard from this spring. We learned hard from it. Like, you know, we thought we had a brilliant shed there, really suited the calves. And then when the weather changed in March, when the winds changed direction, totally different situation. We had to come in and build up walls of bales and everything. And look, it's something that we got over and we got through it. But calf environment is massive, be it on source farm or farm the calf is going to, you know, a good deep bed in the straw, no draft if possible, but a good airflow. So that's sort of hard, you know, sort of a balance to strike, you might say. And then as well, having your clean water bowls, you know, clean areas, all this kind of stuff, emphasizing hygiene. That's the big thing. I know, like, I might have called you out on the last week when we were chatting and said, "Do you know what the knee test is?" And you'd be surprised, you knew straight away in fairness what it was, but you'd be surprised the amount of people that don't know what that is. And for anyone that doesn't, it's basically if you walk into the middle of this calf pen and you kneel down, you should be fit to stand up and your knees be dry after a few seconds. If your knees are wet, those calves are going to be wet. Like, and it's just things like that, you know, if anyone's getting into it, there's handy tips and tricks you'll pick up along the way, but they're the big ones. Calf environment and then sore farms. Bernard Furlong's not on now. He's the sort of the consultancy vet for grassland, but I'm sure he'd agree with me by saying prevention is better than the cure.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we're keeping things right, you'll have a lot less problems.
And Matt, you folk about trying to keep things simple, and there's yourself, Paul, and Margaret Byrne there. But how are you keeping things simple now? Like, what's your grass management? Are you separating any weaker animals at the moment, giving them a little bit more treatment, or how are you working them now from the summer now coming into autumn?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. I think it's fair to say that it's been a difficult summer on calves.
Yeah.
Wet, sort of damp weather, low dry matter and grass. I know talking to a lot of farmers, they're having that issue as well. A little bit of summer scour syndrome creeping in there, trying to buffer up with a little bit of straw where possible. But it's actually a good point you make. I'm going and sending calves down to the out farm now this evening, hopefully. And I think I'm going to draft a few of the smaller ones, keep them back around the yard. And maybe feed them a little bit before going in. I just haven't made my mind up which ones yet. If it could be a calf that looks at me the wrong way, I might be getting it. But we're consistently weighing. I think that's probably the handiest way to judge how well things are going. And we've probably 4 weight recordings done there since calves went out in May, in and around the May time. So quite happy with the average daily gains. We started off there and we hit the sort of 0.7, 0.8 straight off the bat. Which I couldn't believe. I thought that was unbelievable. Now, as the summer went on, we did see that come down a little bit. As I say, I didn't think there was enough fin grass. And as a result of that, I actually kept calves on the meal this summer. I was planning on taking them off for a couple of weeks. And I couldn't bring myself to do it. I kept them there, getting about a kilo a day there, and good quality grass, trying to keep them moving. That's actually just one thing about the Barnes farm there. It's unbelievably well set up for calf to beef, being a sheep farm. Originally, it was a lot of smaller paddocks had been divided up. You sort of have an average of 2-3 acre paddocks on the farm, and it really suits the calf system because the calves are sort of a similar size in terms of their consumption of that. So from an infrastructural point of view, Paul and Margaret have done unbelievable work on that farm. Like, indexes are perfect, pH is perfect, there's laneways, infrastructure is good, water trucks, multiple access points, which was a big thing this year. Multiple access points and paddocks, trying to not damage up or tear up gapways too much. So that's the side of it. But
that's brilliant. And like, I just think it was really interesting there, especially the fact that, look, you're taking the calves into consideration. You fed them all throughout the summer. You're trying to keep their intakes high and checking what their live weight gains are. And especially now before they go in for winter housing, seeing what you want them to put on and then pulling away the weaker calves at the moment now is really, really important to try and improve that dairy calf to beef industry. It's a really, really, really good match. Fair play to you.
Yeah, I think a lot of my farmers will be, if they're listening, any of the customers of mine, you might say, that are listening to the podcast, they'll be sick of me saying it, but I always say it to everyone, measuring is managing.
Yeah.
You're able to measure what's going on, or able to just get an idea of what your losses or your gains are. You're able to make better decisions then to support an improvement. All we're trying to ever do is improve what we're doing. You know, that's the key to it.
Yeah, and the beauty of it, I suppose, is that you're out on farm every day, hitting 3 or 4 farmers every day. Like, and the key is just asking for help. Like, you know, you're going to learn best off what your customer or your clients are doing as well. So you have that advantage where you can annoy them and feed off of them, because, you know, they're experts.
Exactly.
It's brilliant on that, isn't it? You're learning on one side, you're educating on the other. It's a great system, right?
It's a two-way street, Jim. That's the way I say it. If you're comfortable, you're not developing. Like, so it's all about putting yourself out there and, you know, not being afraid to make mistakes and not being afraid to ask questions, to be honest. Yeah. You know, that's the sort of thing.
But would it be fit to take a wee step back just to give us a bit of an insight into your protocol, say, on managing that calf coming into the farm, and even just generally them young calves, and what's your protocols and what do you find work for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's probably the most important thing around the calf rearing system, you might say, is, Lauren, you mentioned before, keep it simple. That's something I abide by in my life. The New Zealand All Blacks team, the rugby team, they were made famous by their slogan, which was KISS, keep it simple. And that's something that I really took on with this, you know, establish protocols early and have it set up, because there's multiple people involved in this. You have to see, you know, I could be away, Paul could be away, Margaret could be away. So there could be different people feeding on a different day. So what I decided very early on was I wanted to set up a system that no matter who was taking on the feeding at a certain time of the day, it didn't matter what or who it was going to be the same. So I went for a system of 2 litres fed twice a day. Right now, I know there's a lot of talk about once a day and, you know, 2.5 litres. I've even heard lads feeding 3 litres. I like the 2 litres twice a day. It keeps it simple. And there's a small equation you can work out there. We have a big whiteboard up beside the sink in the mixer. And all you have to do is plug in your calf numbers that you have to feed, do the little equation, and then you have your total mix. And then it's as simple as, I know every calf is getting 2 liters of milk along the way, right? Now, that's something we kept, and I kept that up. And then simple things like have the thermometer on you. If a calf is not looking right, measure the temperature, you know, that sort of way. Simple little tips and tricks. And I would have learned a bit of that from Bernard and other vets alike. And that's one thing I would say to everyone is, like, we've a really good vet there in Wicklow and Dennis Doyle. And would have consulted Dennis a lot throughout the airing season and would establish a bit of a herd health protocol with him off the bat and him himself and Simon O'Connor as well. And that was something I think is really important, to get your vaccination protocol in place, you know, have a little assessment of your environment, and then little things like carrying the thermometer with you, having a weigh tape maybe to just check some weights as you're going along the place, and just general hygiene, like, you know, general standard operating procedures to keep the whole thing flowing. Like, trucks get washed over here, they get hung up on the fence there, that's where they stay. If you need a truck, that's where it is. The mixer then gets washed after every feeding, and that's where that stays. Just keeping it simple, that no matter who was coming in that morning or that evening, everything's there, it's up on the board. Fire away, you know, that sort of way.
Fair play to you, Matt. You're absolutely flying it. I think it's really, really admirable and inspiring what you're doing. So keep it up. You've mentioned a few drops there with the rugby. For anyone who doesn't know, Matt used to be a professional rugby player.
That is fake news.
And he is fully going to be going to the World Cup, I hope, Matt. Are you?
I don't know now. I have a lot of work to be done, to be fair, so I don't think I'll make it over, but I'll definitely be catching the games on the telly. Maybe
there'll be no work. Your calves,
I tell you, if Ireland win it now, you won't see me for a week.
Take that, Matt. Obviously we're 1 week out now from the opening fixture, France New Zealand, Friday the 8th. Big massive opening fixture, but never mind them two at all. What's your view on Ireland's chances?
You'd have to back them. They've proven it now. They're good. There's depth in the squad. They have a consistency built there. Even young players coming in are standing up. Like, I'm backing them all the way.
The fixtures don't suit from an easy route. Sure they don't. Like, where we finished the group out with two of the tougher games in Scotland.
It's definitely,
South Africa.
They're calling it the group of death, I believe. And it's definitely that. Like, you know, there's a top tier nation there that's going to be very disappointed within that group, be it ourselves, Scotland or South Africa. I think it's fair to say it'll be between the three of us to see who goes through, but I'd be backing us all the way. You'd have to, sure.
And then an easy quarter final against France or New Zealand.
Well, if you're going to do it, you may do it right. You know, that sort of way. You want to beat the best to be the best.
Matt Thompson, peace. I didn't know where you were going with that, but keep it simple. I love it.
Keep it simple, yeah.
Matt, great pleasure to have you on. And I think we should give a special mention there to Margaret and Paul Byrne, who are working along with you and educating you again on another level, which is always brilliant as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Great, great team there, in fairness. And the kids there as well, they're all brilliant. Like, you know, it's great.
Savage. Mind yourselves out there. Farm smart, farm safe.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Sod Pod. We hope you enjoyed it. Find out more, head over to www.grasslandagro.ie or check out our social channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. That's all for this episode. See you next time.